That's not constructive.
Okay. Today I will talk about this deconstructing warped gauge theory, and I will not talk about unification much. And basically, I will address the essential understanding that we've got from deconstructing this weird warped gauge theories. And this work is not based on the completed work, and it is still in progress. So we hope that it will appear in the archive in August. And the actual subtitle of this talk is Learning of Warped Gauge Couplings via Deconstruction. That is the main focus. So, you might ask why we are working on this weird warped gauge theory. We know from experiments that this Weinberg angle is 0.231 at the scale of G boson mass, but from the simple SU5, the prediction is 0.375, which is quite different from the experimental value. In the well-known minimal extension of supersymmetric standard model, large scale differences explains the discrepancy between the predictions of the theory and the experimentally measured value. And this is quite astonishing and made many people to study supersymmetric matter, since these apparently different three-gauge couplings are meeting at one scale. And independently, there are parallel developments with the extra dimensions from a few years ago. However, in this higher dimensional gauge theories has usually power law divergence appearing here, which is entirely different from the four dimensional where we have only the logarithm that allows us to have a concept level learning. And so usually higher dimensional gauge theory is highly ultraviolet physics sensitive, so we cannot make any predictions unless we have a full ultraviolet completion of the theory. Though there are minor exceptions that the Wilson line breaking in these five dimensions allows the logarithmic learning, which is different for different gauge couplings. They are appearing only at the fixed points, so they are still logarithmic. And in the work, they are governed by the grand unified group. So there are some controllable examples, but most of them are highly UV sensitive. So there are not much to say about whether the unification occurs indeed in this higher dimensional, extra dimensional theory. And I assume that everyone knows very much about this Landau-Sundrom scenario. And this curved extra dimension emerged to us in order to explain the big hierarchy from the Planck scale to the electroweak scale. In this scenario, there are very nice features that electroweak scale is explained by the warp factors highly suppressed from the Planck scale. However, at the same time, they impose the cutoff on our theory. If we just raise the scale, then at the scale of TeV, we encounter quantum gravity, which we do not know. So you might expect that this TeV is the naively expected cutoff of this warped extra dimension scenario. However, it is not. There are reasons here, which is still can be achieved within our field theory framework. Since if we just cut like this, then this TeV is the cutoff of our theory. However, we can avoid the dangerous region and see what is happening at much higher scales. And that kind of approach has been studied by many people recently. Humero will address these problems using this polybilis. Oh, so I forgot to mention that this notion of warped gauge theory means that in the background of Randall syndrome, I mean, in the original setup, only the gravity is in five dimensions. However, here we are generalizing the theory such that the gauge fields are also propagating in this curved gravitational background. So that is what I'm calling the warped gauge theory. And in that setup, the learning of that gauge coupling has been studied by these many people. And the first work was done by Pomaro. He used the Pauli-Villars regulator in these five dimensions. And then, surprisingly, he found that logarithmic learning instead of Paolo in this highly curved background. And last year, Randall and Schwartz imposed the position-dependent momentum cutoff, which I've shown just before that naively we expect the momentum cutoff like this, but we can impose it differently for different position of the extra dimension, and then we can extrapolate our theory up to Planck scale. So, but the calculation is quite, I mean, the formula that we've obtained from it is not easily interpretable. And there are other works using the dimensional regularization, and also recently independent work using polybilis, and here we are. Last year, the deconstruction was invented as an alternative of UV completion of our theory. Actually, you might think that this is nothing but the lattice regularization of the old physics. However, this product gauge group allows us to have a UV completion for the part that we are interested in. So, for example, it is not easy to imagine lattice-sizing gauge theories while leaving the gravity only in four dimensions. But here, deconstruction does it. So it is interesting by itself and is a good way of regularizing the theory. So today I will use this deconstruction tool as my regularization of this warped gauge theory, and I will see what is happening. So why deconstruction? This is based on quite simple observations that we know the position space and momentum space has are transformed to each other via the Fourier transforms. So the infinite position space is mapped to infinite momentum space. And once we compactify the position space, then it appears as a discretized momentum space, since we know that the modes are quantized. And also, if we see what is the momentum space of the lattice, then it is compact. So if we combine these two ideas, then and see what is the, if we discretize the compact position space, then what you obtain is also the compact and discrete momentum space, which means that we completed, we did our UV completion. So, actually, the general deconstruction idea of this warped gauge theory had been done by these Japanese groups, and I will not talk much about this generic setup. But what I'm saying is the procedure is quite easy. If we have a five-dimensional Lagrangian, then we just lattice-size it with the gauge kinetic terms at each lattice, and then there is a kinetic terms for the link peaks. And if you look at it as your K kinetic term of link kicks, which are bifundamental. I should draw a figure. So this circle denotes each gauge coupling at the lattice, and there are link fields which are charged on the both gauge couplings, and if it takes a wave, then this acts like a fifth component of the gauge field. So we can make the deconstruction version of this five-dimensional gauge theory in this way. And for the case of warped geometry, the only difference comes in front of the kinetic term of this A5. There is an anti-trivial warp factor. And in order to make the lattice version of this, we have to impose the different lattice size for different positions. So that means in this theory space, we are giving different waves for different link kicks, etc.
When you give this wave, you break the symmetry, right? Spontaneously.
Yeah, right.
So when you give it different, you break it every, each and every of the factors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the lowest energy configuration?
Are you asking the dynamical origin of this different valves? That's not my concern. I mean, today I will not talk about it. And I'm not addressing the dynamical origin of how this configuration comes. I'm just using this deconstruction as a tool to understand the UV physics. So you should understand it as one of the UV regularization of my interesting physics. So I'm not talking much about it, but in the simplest case where I'm considering the scalar QED, then in principle arbitrary waves are possible, and if we are doing some supersymmetric version of this theory, then it is highly constrained by the D flag condition. But for the case of U1, if we give different fired Leopold's term at each site, then in principle we can make that configuration. So different waves in that case corresponds to different fired Leopold's terms, the different parameters of the theory. And for non-abelian case, there are many different directions. So I'm not inquiring the origin of this configuration. So this is just the lattice version of this highly warped gauge theory that is easily seen at the Planck brain or the UV brain. The lattice size is just given by the usual one, and at the IR brain or the TV brain, the lattice size becomes bigger. It is enhanced by this warp factor. So that just shows that our cutoff at that IR brain is TV. So that's nothing but the replacement of that underlying geometry. So we can make a dictionary. So in the geometric side, the lattice spacing corresponds to one of GV1. And actually, I'm using delta y in the framework of this five-dimensional setup. And if we rescale the matrix such that what is the lattice spacing filled by the four-dimensional observer, then that is changed by this exponential warp factor. So it is different for different position. And here y runs from, goes from 0 to pi r, since I'm dealing with the orbifold. And here index I denotes 1 to large n. So we are considering n product group. And in ADS5, there is a curvature related to the cosmological constant in the bulk. And in the deconstruction setup, I introduced epsilon, which shows the difference of the scales. So V1 and then V2 is V1 times epsilon, and Vk is V1 times k minus 1. So in this way, so curvature is related to epsilon, And this epsilon is replaced in this way as the ratio of the curvature to the cutoff. So in the limit where epsilon is equal to 1, that corresponds to the flat space, since curvature goes to 0. And in the opposite limit, where epsilon is much, much less than 1, it corresponds to the theory where our cutoff is below this ADS5 cutoff, I mean, curvature scale. And that is the reason where I'm very much interested in today's talk.
Excuse me, first of all, return to the energy issue, because in this, when you discuss this curved space, I mean, usually that's the consequence of gravity, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you write the Einstein equation, and in one dimension you will find the solution. In your theory, you consider only, as far as I understand, only gauge fields.
Yeah, right.
There's no
in the gravity background, yeah.
So by imposing the condition that all these Vs are strongly different, you consider a highly excited configuration. It's not the vacuum configuration of the system. Because the vacuum configuration, the configuration with the minimal energy, would respond to all these V one and the same. Go back to the five-dimensional theory. To see that it's the case, go back to the five-dimensional theory. After all, it's just discretization of the five-dimensional theory, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in five-dimensional theory, V is independent of X5. It's the lowest energy configuration.
You can have a potential that demands that.
Yeah, but then you have to input it explicitly
for these purposes, no?
Why not? Because what is considered here is a highly, because there is no potential explicitly written, no scalar potential or whatever, just a gauge.
I can say,
from the point of view of gauge theory, that's not, we are discussing extremely highly excited state, which has nothing to do, if you calculate the partition function or the functional integral or whatever, it's measure zero, because it's extremely highly excited state.
So, I think I can show you some examples that I don't know how can I guarantee the stability of this scalar QED. However, once we extend the theory to the supersymmetric one, then all these configurations are the vacuum configuration.
No. So the vacuum configuration is of course with constant.
There are different directions we can.
There is a kinetic term. Have you forgot about the kinetic term? Kinetic term does not allow V to be X5 dependent. Unless you introduce some explicit interaction which is X5 dependent.
We construct a space with four dimensional KDC.
Yeah, but it's a limit for the five dimensional, after all, it's a substitute for a five dimensional theory. You can view it from four dimensions too, it doesn't change anything. What we are discussing, of course, the construction, you can view it as a four dimensional, five dimensional, never mind, okay? But there is a term which forbids it's easier, it's more convenient in different aspects to discuss from different point of view. So I'm ready to discuss it from a four-dimensional point of view, but it's clearly seen from the five-dimensional point of view that unless you introduce specific forces which it may be gravity or if it may be some scalar interaction or whatever, which is X5 dependent, then this configuration will never occur because it's even in supersymmetric version, it's a flat direction, but take any supersymmetric theory, flat direction means that in the vacuum, this field is constant. It may be arbitrary, but it's spatially constant, right? Because the kinetic term doesn't want it to be non-constant. Now, if these are different, it's just an approximation for the kinetic. There is a kinetic term which doesn't allow it to be different in different sites, unless you introduce explicit interaction. I'm ready to discuss this theory, but then explicit interaction X5 dependent should be introduced, and then we will discuss what theory, what kind of theory comes.
Let me understand. You're perfectly happy if they have same value. Are you?
Excuse me?
If they have same vacuum expectation value, everything.
Yeah,
you're happy, right?
Yeah.
My symmetry argument, something, right?
That's the vacuum configuration, right.
I understand.
I think I can say something that if we just solve the equation of motion for this one, then the constant mode is not the zero mode of this A5. So that helps you, I guess. There are wall factor dependence appearing.
But you input it in hand, by hand, right?
Oh, no. What I'm what
in your theory there is no gravity. So you say, I mean, you try to mimic it, right?
Yeah, right. Right.
Hoping that if gravity someday can be deconstructed, it would lead to this picture. But
Really
speaking, that's not proven, because as far as I understand, nobody was able to deconstruct gravity, right?
Yeah, what I'm saying is this A5 is not, I mean, A5 is constant along y, is not the general motor solution of the this curved space.
You know,
so they're appearing the warp factor naturally in this equation of motion.
Natural.
That's
you
what I'm saying.
No.
What?
Five-dimensional theory, it's not natural.
What I'm saying is this one, this warp factor.
Yeah,
so this allows.
It appears naturally only when you include Einstein terms and solve the equation on the, near the brain in one per dimension. Then it appears naturally. In your theory, I don't see any trace of gravity. So it's not natural. It's your will.
So I think it's better to discuss it later. But what I'm saying is just changing the, I mean, VAV in this unit corresponds to the general mode of this A5 in curved background. So once I can find it, then I can neglect the gravity and then can do my deconstruction further. So this epsilon corresponds to the quantity related to the ADS curvature, and there are large N corresponding to the radius of this extra dimension. And this warp factor, I mean, if lambda is the Planck scale, then this exponential suppression corresponding to this conduct, this quantity in the deconstruction version. And in later part of my talk, I will mainly talk about the limit where this epsilon is much, much less than 1. That means that the cutoff of my theory is less than the curvature scale. I mean, here I introduce the cutoff as the scale where the grand unified gauge group is broken. So you can imagine arbitrary theories, but here I'm implicitly imposing that my scale of Gauss-symmetric breaking scale is less than the curvature. Then the interesting physics appears. So we can do the usual setup for the deconstruction. And what is the mass matrix for this product gauge group? It is not diagonal by itself, and we should diagonalize it in order to obtain the eigenvalues. However, it is very complicated form in general. So in the previous paper of the Japanese group, they used the numerical analysis in order to obtain the spectrums and eigenfunctions. However, once epsilon is much less than 1, then we have clear scale differences, and we can systematically diagonalize this matrix 2 by 2. So first, we can diagonalize this 2 by 2 and obtain order 1 eigenvalues and order epsilon scale eigenvalues, and then we can do the next one in a scale separate ways. So that is what I'm doing. And this shows the Moose diagram or the cube diagram, that there are n product group that I will denote G, and G1 and G2 is related by the linkage I1, which takes a value V1, and this V1 is much greater than V2, and so on. So there are scaled hierarchies for each gauge groups. So what we are doing actually is not diagonalizing this N by N matrices at the same time, but diagonalize 2 by 2 first at the scale of V1, and then diagonalize the next one at the scale of V2, etc. So finally, we will obtain the zero mode at the final stage. That is my strategy. And interestingly, without solving this, without exactly diagonalizing these mass matrices, already we know that one eigenvalue is of order 1, And the other one is, once we diagonalize it, only epsilon square term remains here. So for these mass matrices, the other eigenvalue is of order epsilon square, and for the next one, epsilon to the fourth power, and so on. So that allows us to find the eigenstates without knowing the exact numbers appearing this order. So for the case of zero mode, it is rather easy. Just a constant mode, we know that in warped gate theories, the metric warp factor appearing in the square root G and 2G inverse in the kinetic term cancel. So this constant mode is the zero mode of gauge field. And you can see this is the exact zero mode by putting it here. So all these terms are canceled. So you can verify that this is indeed. And then the next smallest one has an eigenvalue of order epsilon n minus 2. That means that all the relative coefficients appearing here should be the same in order not to give a larger contribution compared to this epsilon n minus 2. Therefore, that fixed all the coefficients up to here, and the other one is determined by the orthogonality condition with the zero mode. In the same way, we can do the procedure, and finally, we can obtain all the eigenfunctions up to this order of epsilon square corrections. So, we got the eigenvalues. Of course, there are order one ambiguity appearing in these eigenvalues, but that's not important for our discussion of gauge coupling running. And the wave functions are determined in this way. So this wave function shows very peculiar property compared to the flat space one. Since this zero mode is, we can look this index space as your fifth direction of this of our warped gate theory in the geometric side. So this is exactly constant, and the next excited mode has a small bump at the end of this position. That means near the TV brain. And then the next mode has excitation just beside one, and so on. So finally, the highest excited mode has a wave function only at the Planck brain. So the interpretation is very clear. In classical mechanics, the normal modes are just distinguished by the nodes in full space. So the constant mode is the zero mode, and the first one has one node, and second one has two nodes, and so on. But in this warped extra dimension, since we have a scale hierarchies for different positions, so this is not the minimal energy configuration, the smallest excited state. Rather, this small bump at the TEB corresponds to the first excited states. Since even though it has lots of kinetic energies, but the overall scale is just TEB. So that is the TEB scale excited mode. And the next one, next one, next one. So we can clearly separate the excited modes in this way. So, what does this tell us? There are many papers that use the classical Kolodziejczyk-Klein decomposition. We just imposed the boundary condition on the Planck brain and TV brain, and for this curved background, we can solve the wave function equation with these boundary conditions, and that's nothing but the equation with the Bessel function, which have earned almost equal spacing zeros. It is pi k times exponential minus pi kr. That is the level spacing of each kk mode. That was the old classical decomposition. However, that has some problems because we cannot extrapolate our classical decomposition above TEB since it already involves some wave functions which is beyond the cutoff of our theory. I mean, these are reasons where the quantum gravity should help us. So, that is not the clever approach, and we should we can look from we already learned from our eigenvalue analysis that spectrum from deconstruction shows that the Kaluza-Klein level spacing becomes bigger and bigger, and it is not equal spacing. And that is easy to interpret. And also, the other one is that the wave functions of the higher excited does not have any tail near the IR brain. So they exist only on these regions. So it clearly explains why this phenomenon happens. Since above TEB, these fields are propagating only in this region. That means our effective space becomes smaller. So that is also transferred to the phenomena of widening the Kaluza-Klein level. So this is the physics that we can get easily from deconstruction. And now we are considering the learning of gauge couplings in this ADS5 setup. Since we have a clear separation of the different scales, we can start from a scale V1. And all these couplings, alpha1, alpha2, alpha3, corresponds to the coupling of this product group. And once we give a VAB to the Rinkex field, then these two gauge couplings are diagonalized. I mean, only the diagonal subgroup remains below this scale. And we can take a loan from V1 to V2. And then at that scale, this field, I mean, this gauge group, since I didn't draw, but the actual setup was already all these fields had a linkage in the theory. So this is G1 and this is Phi1 in this way. So what I did was just to use the diagram that these are diagonalized and still this Phi2 is linked. But we can just learn the gauge coupling of this diagonal subgroup. And similarly, we can do the running for each one. And why? Here, one thing that I should say is that each couplings are defined at different scales. Here, alpha2 is defined at V1, and alpha3 is defined at V2, and alpha n is defined at Vn minus 1. Why did I do this? Because in this five-dimensional warped gauge theories, the gauge coupling is written in this way. So when we are saying about the Bell couplings or the Wilsonian couplings at the defining scale of our theory, it is interpreted as a different scale for different positions for our rescaled, if we rescale the metric, then the 4D observer sees the different scale for the gauge couplings. So actually, once we define the gauge coupling in the bulk, that means that at each position, it is defined at different scales. So on the Planck brain, the gauge coupling is defined on the Planck scale, and at the same time, on the TEB brain, the gauge coupling is defined at TEB scale. So that is what I imposed here. And then what is remaining is just the learning of this diagonal group up to next scale. So we can sum it up, and finally we obtain the result. This is the Bell coupling, and some of this Bell coupling remains here, and then the isolated logarithmic learning. This is just a simple logarithmic learning of one particle in four dimensions, except the fact that this beta function coefficients include gauge fields and the linkage fields. So it is slightly different from the four-dimensional one. But what is important is that we got just the logarithmic learning, not something enhanced one. So let me compare the result with the flat space. In flat space, I'm considering the five-dimensional theory compactified on a circle as a toy example. And then we can see how many particles are involved in the loops for given energy scales. At the scale below 1 of R, there are only one zero mode contributing to the learning. And above this, there are 3 and 5. So for given energies, for the interval energy E to E plus 1 of R, there are effectively an E Kalotsky climb modes which are contributing to one loop diagram. Here I'm accepting the dimensional regularization idea that if we are starting from the theory, then for the mass, I mean for the scale where some periods are becoming massive, we integrate out and we only treat with the light degrees of freedom, and in that way we can find the learning equation for the gauge couplings, and this effective number of classical line modes below E is I haven't write down here, but in this case it is just E. So we can, these are cancelled, so we can integrate over the energies, and finally we obtain the linearly divergent piece. That is the case appearing in this five-dimensional case. However, in the warp space, what is different? The difference first comes from the spectrum. The spectrum is not dense as we expected. As we go to the higher scales, the mass gap becomes bigger, so there are fewer classical line modes than expected. Therefore, this number is less than the linear in energy. So actually, it is logarithmic. But even for that case, if we integrate it over, then we obtain logarithm scale. I mean, it is very clear. Since what I've got from the previous one is just the learning equation of one particle. But here, we have many, even though it is less than just the flat space. So it seems puzzling, but I should add more by going back to my deconstruction setup, that in... So this is the case. If we have a scale, for a given scale, there are particles which are contributing to the learning of the gauge couplings, so it increases since we should incorporate all the low energy degrees of freedom when we are calculating the learning equation of gauge coupling. But the result is not. It seems like that we have a zero mode here, and then above this scale, only one new particle is contributing, not the zero mode, and then the other particle is contributing. So what is clear is that for any scale, there is effectively only one degree of freedom that is contributing to the learning of this warped gauge theory. So let me see this more clearly. Below the Kalotsky Klein mass scale, only diagonal subgroup is learning. So there is only one zero mode which contributes to the learning, so it is very clear. And for the scale, above this first excited KK mode, what is the gauge coupling that we are interested in? That is the diagonal subgroup of this AN-1 and AN. This is the running that I'm interested in. And if we look at it from my Kalerszczuk line basis, I mean, if you look at it from this eigenstates, then this zero mode has a contribution dominates. And then the first excited one has a contribution like this. So the overall contribution is just one. I mean, this is quite different from the usual one. Why this is happening? That's because in flat space, we use the Kalerszczuk line decomposition and just consider the learning of the zero mode. However, here, it is quite different. Once, when the theory is given, I've defined my Bayer coupling at the scale of lambda, which is position dependent. So this is the higher dimensional theory that gives the this one is the systematic integrating our procedure of my ADS5 theory. So once this theory is given at the scale of lambda, which I'm assuming the Gauss scale, then what is next is we are integrating over in this way, which doesn't preserve the symmetry of this ADS5. I mean, the translational invariance with the rescaling of the metric. So, since we are dealing with this region, not this region, so we are obtaining quite different results from the flat space analysis of the zero mode zero mode gauge coupling learning. So we can do, I mean, we can look at what is the contribution of each Kalerszczuk line mode at this scale. But what is clear is if we sum up all this, then the net contribution is just the contribution of one particle. So that is, in other words, it is understood that the wave functions for the case of zero mode, it is spread, and only part of the wave functions are contributing for the learning of the gauge coupling located at some part of this ADS5. So, similarly, we can look this one. So, the final expression is not power law and not log square, but it's log. And this is the actual figure that I wanted to show, but I mean, it is not clear. What I was trying to say was that the thickness of this line corresponds to one particle contribution, and here, though there are many different particles are contributing, but only part of it is contributing, and the sum corresponds to the effect of one particle. And there are many interesting issues, and there are straightforward ways to attack the problems. And the first generalization is putting matters in this background. We can put it on the Planck brain or on the TV brain or in the bulk. And putting it on the Planck brain or TV brain is too trivial. We can just add the legs at the first gauge group or add the leg at the final gauge group. But putting some matters in the bulk is rather non-trivial. So I show it as one example that this is the one scalar field which is charged under this under this gauge group. And there are non-trivial interactions which will give a kink mass, which is generically allowed, which I want to deal with it by bearing this kink mass and what is happening. This is not entirely completed, so I will not show, but basically the procedure is the same. If we from this one, if we put the valve for this linkx, then we can find the mass matrix n by n, and then that by diagonalizing, what is different is that here the scale is quite, clearly distinguished by order 1 and order epsilon square, mass terms. And for the case of kink mass, 1 is given by much less than 1 proportional to this kink mass parameter, and 1 might be obtained quite bigger than epsilon squares, depending on the sign of this kink mass parameter. So that gives different contribution to the learning, because at some scales, if the mass is in between 1 and epsilon square, then at that scale we should integrate out this extremely high viscosities, and in that case the net contribution will be much less than the one particle learning from the high energy scale to low energy scales. So finally the answer depends on this kink mass parameters, but at this moment I cannot show the exact result, and frankly speaking, there is no simple analytic expression that is available, so I don't know what to do. And finally, I will address only, slightly about the idea of unification, which was the motivation that I'm looking at the learning of gauge couplings. Since if gauge symmetry is broken at the scale lambda, then we don't need to care about what is happening above lambda, since it was common to all the gauge couplings. So the only difference comes from the scale of lambda. And in our formulation, in the deconstruction setup, it just allows us to go from the low energy gauge couplings to the couplings defined at lambda. That is what I did, and that formula allows us to see whether this unification is possible or not for some given configurations. So first, let me see what happens for the MSSM. Actually, there are lots of metal fields, but they are the complete multiplets of SU5, so it doesn't affect whether the gauge couplings are unified or not. It only affects the absolute value of the gauge coupling at the Gauss scale. So what is relevant is the pure gauge parts and two Higgs doublets. Here I'm in the vector multiplet and the chiral multiplets. And the unification condition is given by this MSSM ratio. So any theory which give the same ratio like this will predict the unification of gauge couplings. It is the generic properties. So in our case, we should do, we need gauge fields and two Higgs doublets in the bulk. If it is, of course, there are one easy solution given by Pomarol in the paper of unification without desert. If we just put all the matter fields and Higgs on the Planck brain, then it just learns in a usual way, and only the gauge fields are propagating in the bulk, then it is also, it looks like a four-dimensional one. However, the only difference with the MSSM is there is no desert, because this bulk Higgs field will have a closed climb mode starting from TEB. So that is one easy solution, but that is in conflict with the original idea of this warped physics, that we wanted to solve the hierarchy of the electroweak scale compared to the Planck scale. And so at this moment, I don't have a concrete idea. And the only thing, this is the setup of Pomarol, and the only thing that I can do is putting quarks and leptons at different positions, and which is not easy to, theory space is much richer than the geometric spaces, in the sense that we can imagine arbitrary kinds of links for the fields which is not easily interpreted in the geometric sense. But anyway, one...
Because I really don't understand what's going on. Because the whole motivation for Randall's syndrome is to explain gravity naturally, right? That the warping is due to gravity.
Yeah.
The gravity cannot, does not fit in the decomposition setup.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is...
Right a second ago, you said that the theory space is much richer and there are, you know, mousses or quivers which has no geometric meaning. If they have no geometric meaning, forget about gravity, right?
Then
what's the point of talking of Randall syndrome and warping?
There are two things. The first one is, I think I'm using this deconstruction setup as one regularization method of well-known physics.
Regularization method for what? For the Randall syndrome world, right?
Yeah, right.
Randall syndrome world is the world with gravity, and that's 100% important.
Yeah, but there are big scale differences from the five-dimensional Planck scale and the five-dimensional Cobbett scale and my concern of this five-dimensional grand unified scales. So as long as I'm not raising this lambda cutoff much higher than K nearly M Planck, I do not need to worry about much about gravitation.
What is it in your decomposition approach which cannot be obtained from five-dimensional and Randall syndrome? What is it there new, or what did you input new kind of physics? Because I understand the original, you know, the original work of the Harvard group, I understand, they're totally different idea. They take internal space and this, and they show that this can mimic to an extent, you know, a compact fifth dimension. And then they extended it further on by noticing that by taking the complicated quivers or mood diagram, you can get something which is not even geometric.
Yeah.
But because you start from a setup which was invented by Randall syndrome for a specific purpose in a very specific physics environment. They have the Einstein equation in five dimensions. It is geometry. It is geometry, okay? Because only geometrically get into this picture. Now you say, okay, I don't want this five dimension. I'm going to discretize it, and I'm going to get some. Technically, it's possible because you can always discretize any dimension, and then if you go back to the limit of small lattice size, you're returning to the fifth dimension. But what new can you get? Nothing. As far as I understand,
this is exactly equivalent to the dimensional regularization or polyglot regularization.
It's not regularization in a sense, because you don't regularize gravity. And the whole point of the Randall syndrome was putting gravity.
Regularize gravity. I mean, none of the theory, I mean, none of the methods regularize gravity. So we just take apart the gravity part, and we are just doing the field theory on that gravity background.
Yeah. But do you imply that your lattice size is going to stay fixed, or are you going to go to zero lattice size?
Here I showed the example that this lattice spacing is not so, I mean, quite large. I mean, not. I didn't take the continuum limit, but in principle it is possible to take a continuum limit where epsilon here.
So do you imply that when you take the continuum limit, you are going to get something different from the five-dimensional theory concerned by Randall and Sutter? Do you imply this or you don't? Just to set record straight.
Oh, what I'm saying is, if we just send that to infinity y epsilon nearly 1, then we can approach the continuum limit. That is possible, but in my talk, I didn't do it because it is not the reason where my
so then what is the physics set up, you know, at least even conceivable. I don't imply now any relevance for the experiment. But what kind of nature or natural background you might anticipate or
yes, I think he's going to understand quantum phase dynamics in the classical gravity background. So because here the gravity is just a background, a fixed background. You don't have to have quantum natural gravity. Right? So then is going to find some.
But it's not in the continuum limit as the word as he just emphasized. It's not the background. It's not in the quantum gauge field in the background gravity, because he discretized the fifth dimension. Okay? So it's a setup which is not realizable in nature, in a sense. I don't see any perpendicular dimension which is a set of points. I cannot imagine.
Yeah, why
I can imagine Randall Sundrum, you know, for technical reasons, you say it's hard for me to work in the continuum limit. For the time being, I discretize it with having the task of later on taking the continuum limit. That's fine. That's what lattice people do all the time. But yeah, his limit is totally different because his epsilon is not close to 1.
No,
and
no,
on the contrary,
no.
It's much less than 1. So it's very
far
from this.
You misunderstood my point. I can't take arbitrary values of epsilon.
Okay, let's.
It can be.
Okay, could you please summarize in 5 minutes what's going to come out in the limit when you approach the continuum limit?
Yeah, in that domain, the wave function is just the usual Bessel functions, and the clutch primals are just what we derived from the geometry.
So you are going just to repeat what Randall and Sundrum did, right? In this limit, you are going back.
In their limit, the calculation of the learning gauge coupling is not easy. The physics of the learning behavior of gauge coupling.
No, technical complexity, let's put it aside. Do you get anything different from what they obtained, or do you get the same in the continuous limit? That's what I want to know. If you get even in a different way, I say, okay, it's a nice thing to do.
Yeah,
you
sort
of avoided some of the technical difficulties, that's fine. But if you are stating that you are getting something different, you're not getting
exactly the same result. So I confirm the weird result by this deconstruction setup more clearly.
Can I ask also a question about the if you try to take the continuum limit in deconstruction in the unworked case, you have a problem because it hits strong coupling. Is there a similar problem here? It should reflect the fact that the underlying theory is non-normalizable. How does that work here?
Oh, what I'm saying is I do not worry about the physics of this case.
Sorry?
I'm not talking about the physics of this scale. So I just gave the boundary condition for a given scale.
Yes.
That corresponds to my Bell coupling of the 5-dimensional theory. So what I'm trying to do is, once this Bell coupling is given at the scale of lambda, then what is the learning effects for that theory using these two measures? So, in that sense, what is happening above the lambda is not my concern. So,
it softened a little bit, because here in the continuum limit, you have a warped geometry, and it's only the modes which are localized near the brain contribute more than other modes. So effectively, you are closer to four-dimensional theory than in the flat space. But still, it's a five-dimensional theory. So you will still have problems.
So now
it's
exactly
the continuum limit.
The right time to do what gate theory is quite different from the gate theories on the flat extra dimension, since the effective number of current states at given energy is scaling differently. So even if we are doing five-dimensional gate theory, if it is on the warped background, then the effective clutch primal is less than the linear in E. And in the five-dimensional warped case, so if we just put it the effective clutch primal numbers, then we obtain low scales. However, it is not. Indeed, what I obtain is not low scale, but just the result of four-dimensional learning with one particle. And that is because this usual expression is based on the Kalman plane decomposition and looked at only the zero mode gauge couplings. But here, what we should do is somewhat different. We should look at the learning of gauge couplings depending on the position. So the actual running effects is smaller than this night or zero mode learning, and we can obtain the nice logarithmic learning in this work theory. Here I consider only the case where my operation scale is less than the coverage scale. And in this limit, I neglected this term in my naive derivation of the eigenvalues and my values. And this is the linear divergence contribution. And in my expression, it is highly suppressed like this. So the learning is just logarithmic, so we can keep the same accuracy for the predictions of these couplings as like the Fourier theory. And for the case of unification or proton decay, it's rather tough question, so I still the work is in progress. Thank you.
Any more questions?
I'd be interested to understand what's the relation between this work and the work we heard from Professor Chia last week. In other words, are the results supposed to match for the learning?
It is not easy to see. The first of all occurring is the colors-dependent threshold regression occurring when it crosses the color scale. Here, I consider the limit where my cutoff is below the curvature. I mean, I'm imagining that my symmetric breaking scale is less than curvature.
Does this limit make sense to begin with?
I mean, I can impose.
Because the curvature is fixed, right? So, and you have a cutoff which you cannot take to infinity. So.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, I mean, it needs not be quite different, but if lambda is just one fifth of k, then it is exponentially suppressed. What I'm obtaining is exponential minus 2k over lambda. So this is 10 to minus 3 for decades. So that's enough for my experience.
Some more comments.
First of all, is considering trying to range that you cannot arrive at continuum because that this continuum means somehow means that you go n equals infinity, the number of sides goes infinity, but also at the same time this considering a limit that epsilon is much, much less than 1. So in a sense the true continuum limit means that epsilon goes to close to 1 and n goes to infinity, right? So because of some technical difficulty, he was just focusing on this limit, actually limit epsilon is much less than 1. That corresponds to the limit that k and a's curvature is much, much less, not much, somewhat less than below, above his cutoff. I mean, his cutoff is below a's curvature, but still it can make sense if he assumes that his cutoff is that scale. So that the still got asymmetry works above the cutoff, k is bigger. So he's not interested in some of the quantum dynamics of this thing because in any case he specified in damage, for instance, because he's interested in some different sort of phase couplings, different learning of phase couplings, which will take place only at scales below m gap. His cutoff scale is somewhat below the basis curvature. So I mean, he doesn't just test this and learning below this cut, which is again below this k. Mm-hmm. So asking what is continuum limit means whatever. Anyway, in physical limit, in this region, we cannot arrive at continuum limit.
But when you're talking about the grid breaking, what kind of, can you know the rules for, you know, assuming some grid thing? What theory do you have in mind? Because now you have three gauge rules. Do you draw three disconnected rules like that? Or what?
Yeah,
do you
I should, yeah.
Then you assume that I see.
This work was, preliminary stage and developing a tool in searching whether orientation was or not. So.
One more comment, sorry. If you compare his result with my previous work, and in my, I just usually finish the calculations. I will finish the calculation in this background. And in my case, my cutoff was much above the previous cutoff.
Right.
So I want to calculate the quantum fraction between my cutoff and k. That includes k times some radius, so k times orbital length r,
but he can never see that kind of correction in his limit.
Yes. Okay. Your theory is just pervision theory for fixed background. Is it right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the, if we start the bioimaginary IT education, and then we find the, some vacuum solution as a wall of geometry, and then we consider some the matter, for example, the gauge field, ball gauge field, and then we have a pervision, then we can find some local inertial frame as a result of a general equivalence. Then we can consider some pervision theory like this one. Is correct?
Yeah. Any more questions?
Not a standard speaker.